gospel picture that is presented in this parable. It is in two words, a net. The kingdom of heaven is like unto a net. R.C.H. Linsky, who is one of the greatest Greek scholars in the history of the Christian church, and wrote a massive series of commentaries on the entire New Testament, which was written in Greek, R.C.H. Linsky pulls out that little word net, and here's what he says about it. He says it was the largest kind of net that was known to them in that day. It was anchored to corks all the way across the top and weighted with lead pieces at the bottom, and it would often sweep as much as an entire half mile of water in its scope. End of quote. So what we have here, picturing the presentation of the gospel of Christ, is a wide, sweeping, all-embracing net that is just flung indiscriminately out in the water. It sinks to its place, and in the appointed moment, it begins to be drawn in, and finally it is popped up on the shore, including everything that has come in the pail and the scope of its sweep. Now the symbol here is a vivid picture of the proclamation and presentation of the gospel of Christ. And Jesus says it is like a massive, gigantic, great net that sweeps down through the rolling, moving, surging masses and tides of humanity. And it seines them all together and brings them up on shore. And as it catches those who respond in profession, it will gather them onto the shore, pop them out into an element that is not native to them, one they'd better be familiar with or they'll perish. And he says, then it will all be over. As far as they're concerned, the bad. As far as they're concerned. Now, I suppose the best illustration of this outside the Bible is in a very familiar old television series. The name of it was Dragnet. And you remember the story, dum-da-dum-dum. And Jack Webb comes in, the characters are introduced, and here's what it is. It's the story of a massive police dragnet in the city of Los Angeles. By the way, that's Los Angeles means the angels, the city of the angels. What a vivid picture, this parable right here. You see, they're associated with the final popping of that net out of the water, the angels. That's what Jesus said. And he comes out and they begin to scour the city. This massive police dragnet just seines through the city of Los Angeles, bringing in sometimes almost indiscriminately, almost anybody that gets in the pathway. And once they're encountered by the law, their true character shows up. They're either good or bad, depending on their response to the law in the basic character of their lives. And that's the picture that's given here. In the response to Jesus Christ, everything is determined, and the final time, the final bringing in of the net is going to expose those who are worthwhile to God or those who are useless to God. Now let me say again, and some of you have questioned me, and I'm glad you have. I hope you always come to me like several have personally. Some of you didn't believe this, but it's true anyway. There's not going to be anybody in heaven who is worthless to God on earth. Now, you can write that in big letters in the front of your Bible. There will not be anybody in heaven who is worthless to God on earth. You say that's not salvation by grace. You'd better read the Bible. Certainly it's salvation by grace. I believe salvation by grace. I know salvation by grace. If it were not for the grace of God, I never could have been saved, never would have been saved. But that is not inconsistent with what is said here. Nobody will be in heaven who is worthless and useless to God on earth. Because when He saved you for a purpose. And if that purpose is not manifested, you are declaring you've never been saved. Now that's what the book of James says in such a way that nobody could misunderstand it. And people have said, well, James disagrees with Paul. Not on your life. Paul is talking about the overall scope of the salvation by grace. James is talking about the invariable and inevitable outcome that will always be there if a person is saved. Now that's what he's talking about right here. So this is the gospel picture, a great net. Now the second thing is the gospel personnel pictured here. You'll notice that nobody is identified as the one doing the job here. The ones doing the job are simply called by the pronoun they. You notice that? In verse 47, there's the operation in progress, and yet there aren't any workers. And in verse 48, the operation is concluding before you're ever introduced to anybody who does the work. Now, what does this mean? What does it mean? Well, who are the they? Let's back up just a moment. In all of these parables that picture the true work of the kingdom, there's one person working in all of them. Did you notice that? In the parable of the sower, the parable of the wheat and tares, the parable of the mustard seed, the parable of the treasure hid in the field, and the parable of the pearl of great price, one person does all the work. Who is that person? Jesus. Now that means that all gospel work is done by Jesus Christ. All of it. There's no exception. But he does not do it isolated from his people. And this is the only parable that really reveals the full scope of what history has afforded us about what Jesus Christ is doing in the world. Because this parable sweeps all of history and then emphasizes the end. Here's what it says. Jesus does not work alone. He never has worked alone. He's not now working alone. He never will work alone. There are certain people who are employed here to do the work that he does through them or by them. They are described here simply by the plural pronoun they. Every other time it is he, a singular pronoun. Here it is they. That means that he has stooped down to select people and use them daringly by grace to do the job which he alone can do, and that means he must do it through them. He does not work alone. Now that's consistent with everything you know about Jesus. Go back to the miracle of the changing of water to wine. Did he do it alone? No, he employed servants. He said, fill the water pots with water, and they went and filled them. He said, now when they're full and back in place, go and draw out and take to the headmaster of the feast. And they reached in, and when they reached in with their vessels to draw out the water, it had become wine. But he employed somebody else to do a part of the work, although he himself produced the miracle. Same thing is true in the feeding of the 5,000. He had five little loaves and two small fishes. Did he, when he prayed and started to distribute them, did he take them to the people himself? No. He called his apostles up here in an orderly way. He gave the bread and fish to them. They took it out and distributed it to the masses. He does not work alone. Now, who are the fishermen here? Well, let's let this gospel interpret itself. Way back at the beginning of his personal call to his men, Jesus Christ said this in Matthew 4:19. He said, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. And in Luke chapter 5, he swept his hand along those who were coming off the banks of the Sea of Galilee in the fisherman's business. And he said, from now on, if you will follow me, you will not catch mere fish anymore, you will catch men. Now they are the fishermen, and they do a specific work, one that is carefully identified here. I want you to notice that they are inconspicuous. Now that's very important. You don't even know who they are. There's not a name mentioned. There's not a picture drawn. All you have is they. They. Who are they? We don't know. They're just fishermen. Every person forgiven of his sins by Jesus Christ must be a fisherman, or he violates the purpose of God and there's a question about his salvation. Now, that's what this parable is teaching. That's what Jesus taught. He must be a fisherman. And I just have to simply say, most of you don't even begin to look the part. You don't even begin to look the part. If what this says is true, many here do not begin to qualify. Or they may have mild intention, but they never get to it. They never ever put out the net. They never ever draw it in. They never ever engage in kingdom enterprise. They just do not get to it. Sometimes they get a little stirred and they get a little convicted and they get a little guilty and they hope sometime that can be corrected, but it never happens. It never happens. They give no evidence that they're saved as far as the practical outcome is concerned. But these fishermen are inconspicuous. That means they don't draw attention to themselves. You see, one of the rules of fishing is that you keep yourself out of sight as much as possible in order not to potentially distract the fish by your appearance. And especially is that true when you're fishing for certain kinds of fish and in certain places. Other places it doesn't make any difference. You can talk or laugh or beat the water or anything. You'll still catch some fish. But sometimes the rule is you keep yourself as inconspicuous